Luke chapter 12 verse 1 tells us that on one occasion, when a crowd of many thousands had gathered so that they were trampling on one another, Jesus began to teach. Jesus was teaching spiritual lessons. He was talking about things of an eternal nature. Then verse 13 says that someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you?" Then he said to the crowd, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." In verse 14, Jesus had asked this man, "Who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you?" An arbitrator is a person who settles a dispute. This man was asking Jesus to settle a legal matter between him and his brother regarding their inheritance. Rabbis dealt in civil and legal matters as well as in spiritual matters, and since Jesus was commonly regarded as a teacher, a rabbi, it's not surprising that his opinion was sought on this issue. Under Jewish law, the older brother would have inherited 2/3 of the estate, and the younger brother would have inherited 1/3 of the estate. Since the older brother would have been an executor of the estate, the appeal here would seem to be that of the younger brother, implying either that the elder brother had not given him his share, or the younger brother was thinking of trying to break the ancient custom of primogeniture, which gave the double portion to the oldest son. Some of the worst fights occur when families try to settle things after the death of a loved one. You've heard it said that where there's a will, there's a way. We could also say that where there's a will, there's a lot of relatives. But it seems likely that this man thought he had a just claim, or he would not have taken it to Jesus. We can't be certain as to whether this was an appeal for redress under the existing law, or if it was a bold movement towards social reform. And it doesn't really matter, because Jesus refused to be involved either way. Jesus came teaching that his kingdom is not of this world. Jesus knew that a changed world in terms of legal and social issues would not solve many problems. Only changed hearts will do that. No answer would have been satisfactory as long as there was greed and covetousness in the hearts of these two men. And it does seem that this was a problem with both brothers. The fact that the word "you" in verse 14 is plural indicates that the application was for both parties. Some translations reflect this. For example, the Contemporary English Version says that Jesus answered, "Who gave me the right to settle arguments between you and your brother?" Legally, the firstborn had the right to a double portion. We've talked about that. But Jesus is not concerned with the legal aspects of the situation. So Jesus addressed the true need of these men in a parable. In verses 16 through 21, the text says that Jesus told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" The Bible says a lot about the danger of riches, but not many people are afraid of riches. If someone breaks the commands not to murder and not to steal, they're considered criminals and worthy of shame. But if somebody breaks the command not to covet, and if they become wealthy because of their covetousness, they are considered industrious and enterprising and worthy of honor. And though this parable Jesus told is possibly hypothetical, the man in the parable would have been a man who was respected and highly esteemed in the community. He would have been honored and considered to be very wise, yet God called him a fool. Let's consider why. God called him a fool because he forgot others. He thought only of himself. His debates with himself make this quite clear. He used 13 personal pronouns in 3 sentences. In verses 17, 18, and 19, when he addresses himself, starting in verse 17, it says, "He began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.'" A writer once introduced one of his self-centered characters as follows. He said, "Edith lived in a little world bounded on the north, south, east, and west by Edith." Well, that describes a lot more people than just Edith. But God teaches us to love others. And God teaches us that we have the duty to help others when we can, that we need to assist and serve others as we have the opportunity and the ability. 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 and 18, Paul says, "Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money." He goes on in verse 18 and says, "Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others." In Ephesians 4, verse 28, Paul tells Christians that they need to work, doing something useful with their own hands, that they may have something to share with those in need. This is miles away from the thinking of most people as they work and make money. Sincerity in our love and service to God is measured not by how many Bible verses we can quote, though I'm not downplaying the importance of knowing Bible verses. Sincerity in our love and service to God is measured not by how often we attend services, though I'm not downplaying the need for and the benefits of attending services. But our sincerity and love is measured by our faithfulness to God and by our love and care for others. James chapter 1, verse 27 says, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." The word "visit" in this text does not mean that you dropped by and spent 5 minutes talking to someone and then you put a check mark on your list. It might include stopping by and visiting for 5 minutes, but the word "visit" in this verse is referring to genuine concern for any who are less fortunate and who are suffering. Many are going to be unworthy on the day of judgment because of selfishness and an unwillingness to seek opportunities to help others. Matthew chapter 25, verses 41 through 43, Jesus said that he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you who are cursed," this is talking about the day of judgment, "into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me." It's significant that Jesus does not mention terrible crimes against humanity or egregious sins of immorality. The focus here is on a failure to take others into account. Jesus is not denying that such terrible crimes or sins will be punished. He's merely shocking his audience with the realization that one does not have to commit horrible acts of wickedness to be separated from God eternally. Jesus' audience would have had no problem with the teaching that crimes and immorality would be punished, while they excused themselves for passing by the man who had been beaten and was lying on the roadside between Jerusalem and Jericho. And so God called this man a fool because he was selfish and he forgot about others. And God called this man a fool because he forgot real joy. This man's motto was "eat, drink, and be merry." Fact is, this is the motto of the world. As people put themselves first, they begin to get a warped sense of pleasure. Henry David Thoreau perhaps spent too much time on Walden Pond and too much time reading Ralph Waldo Emerson, learning transcendentalism with its emphasis on mysticism, but he nonetheless had some very poignant and insightful things to say. For example, Thoreau once said, "That man is the richest whose pleasures are the cheapest." This unfortunate situation, the COVID-19 situation, is giving us opportunities to learn valuable lessons. In this situation, many are being compelled to consider what things are really essential and meaningful in life. Since we've been forced to give up food, fun, and frolic in social settings, but we don't learn lessons unless we have the heart to do so. When God is given His proper place, only then are we able to put things in their proper perspective. C.S. Lewis once said, "I sometimes wonder whether all pleasures are not substitutes for real joy." Real joy comes not from things, not from achievements or activities, but real joy comes only from a genuine relationship with God. God called this man a fool because he forgot real joy. God called this man a fool because he forgot his soul. This man had his mind set on material things. This man thought of life only in terms of his possessions. Mark Twain once defined civilization as a limitless multiplication of unnecessary necessities. Most of the things we Americans think are necessary are truly only luxuries. Verse 15 of our text tells us that Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Thoreau also said, "A man is rich in proportion to the number of things which he can afford to leave alone." Many things are not intrinsically condemned. They are not condemned in and of themselves. It is when we put things above God. It is when we put things above people. It is when things become our primary concern and interest. Matthew 16, verse 26, Jesus said, "What is a man profited if he gains the whole world but loses his soul?" Proverbs 23, verses 4 and 5 says, "Do not wear yourself out trying to be rich. Be wise enough to know when to quit. In the blink of an eye, wealth disappears, for it will sprout wings and fly away like an eagle." That has its application for this point in time as well. We are told that wealth can choke the word of God. Matthew 13, verse 22, in the parable of the sower, Jesus said that the seed that fell among the thorns represents those who hear God's word, but all too quickly the message is crowded out by the worries of this life and the lure of wealth, so no fruit is produced. We are told that wealth can create snares and temptations. In 1 Timothy 6, verses 9 and 10, Paul writes, "People who long to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And some people craving money have wandered from the true faith, rather, and pierced themselves with many sorrows." We are told that wealth can give a false sense of security. Just a few verses later in 1 Timothy 6, verse 17, Paul said, "Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment." Material things can distract us from the needs of the soul. God called this man a fool because he forgot God. He didn't take God into account. He left God out of his plans. This is what seems to be condemned by James in James chapter 4, verses 13 through 16. The text says, "Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money." He says, "Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil." I believe James is condemning presumptuousness. He's condemning the attitude that we are in charge of our lives, that we will work things out like we want them to be. We will make our plans and we will see them through. Thank you very much. Sound like the man in Luke chapter 12? We all have these plans regarding what we want to accomplish academically, financially, in terms of retirement, car, house, things. We've got places to go, people to see, sights to behold, the world to conquer. But what is the benefit of any of that if, quite frankly, we die and go to hell? The greatest blunder of the rich man was that he did not take God into account. And this brings us to the last point. God called this man a fool because he forgot death. He thought he had a long time to live. He made plans for many years, yet he only had one day left. We often forget death, and we act like we're going to live forever. Someone has defined a fool as one whose plans end at the grave. Do you have plans for beyond the grave? A lot of people find it comforting to believe that there is no afterlife, that everything just ends at death. But the Bible teaches that not only does the soul live after death, the Bible also says that we are called into account. We are judged based on what we have done on this earth. Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10, that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one of us may receive what is due us for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. The man in the parable thought he had a long life ahead of him. Even when you've lived a long life, it still seems brief. When speaking about an incident that occurred 50 or 60 years ago, 40 or 50 years ago, how many times have you heard an older person say, "It seems like it was just yesterday"? Peter spoke about the brevity of life. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 24, he says, "All flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man is like the flower of the grass. The grass withers, and its flower falls away." James spoke about the brevity of life, and he also addressed the mentality of the rich man in the parable who thought he could just make plans for the future and do as he wished. James chapter 4, verse 14 says, "You do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." Comair Flight 5191 from Lexington, Kentucky to Atlanta, Georgia on August 2006. Flying out of the Bluegrass Airport, the pilot turned onto runway 26, which is too short for safe takeoff for the plane that they were in. The plane flew straight into a hillside. The cause of the crash was identified as pilot error. 49 died, only one survived. There were people with all kinds of plans on that plane. A recent graduate ready to start life. Businessmen trying to seal a deal. People going to visit family, a couple that had just gotten married, and one couple was going on a trip to Aruba for their 30th wedding anniversary. Their names were Clark and Bobby Sue Denton from Stanford, Kentucky. They were members of the church there. When that plane crashed, the only thing that mattered for every one of those passengers on board was, were they in a right relationship with God? It didn't matter what kind of house they lived in. Didn't matter what kind of car they drove or how many things they had. Didn't matter how popular or famous they were. Their name recognition in this world was unimportant. It did not matter if they were making six figures or nine figures or only four figures. The only thing that mattered was, were their souls saved? Where would they spend eternity? May we not be like the foolish rich man in the parable in Luke chapter 12. May this time of unprecedented consternation and angst serve to point us to values and concerns that are of greater worth than material things. May this time of unprecedented concern point us to values and concerns that are of greater worth than money and possessions. May these troublesome times point us to the only one who can satisfy our needs and fill us with joy and prepare us for that which is inevitable, death and eternity.